Sweat Technique. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are you thinking of hour two of your Southern Charm Marathon? If you weren't with us earlier, Blanker's put it on Bravo so we can catch up on the Southern Charm Marathon ahead of tomorrow's season premiere. What are you thinking?
I'm not watching it for two hours straight. I'm not taking Del Shine for being the one that actually did it. There's a lot of good-looking women on there.
You want to make it very clear that you weren't the one to put it on there.
Yeah, because I don't watch that show. I didn't even defensive. Know what the hell it was called. You came in and I'm like, within 2 seconds, was like, why is Southern Charm on the TV? I
was
like,
it was weird.
What the hell is that?
Isn't it weird that Southern Charm was on our TV?
In a sports radio station, yes.
Yeah, it was weird. You were very quick, very defensive that you weren't the one to put it on there.
Because I don't watch that show.
So will you watch it now that you've been watching it on mute for the last 2 hours?
No, it looks like brain numbing.
Brain numbing?
Yeah. It just looks like a bunch of people that get lit up and then they get, you know, go on binges overnight and then they talk about it the next day.
It's not bad. It's pretty accurate. Pretty accurate description of the show without ever listening to it at all. Just looking at it for the last 2 hours. Brian, were you watching the season premiere, Southern Charm, tomorrow night?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got a whole watch party going on. We're going to make some apps and have some cocktails. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, you probably need an espresso martini.
Yeah, I think that's a given.
That'll be important.
And it's December, so maybe some like peppermint flakes or something on there. Make it a little festive.
Not bad. I caught up on Landman and Yellowstone. No, we caught up on Yellowstone 2 nights ago. Caught up on the last 2 episodes of Landman.
You're not still looking for Costner, right?
No, no. They do have a Costner body double, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
To keep the storyline going?
Nah.
Well, like, what, you just see him off in the background or something?
Well, I don't want to. I'm anti-spoiler, so I'm trying to tiptoe what I'm talking about.
There is a Costner. For me, but obviously the listener.
There is a Costner body double that is used in this season of Yellowstone. There's actually talks that they're going to renew it next year for season 6.
Which without
I'm okay. I think six seasons is usually the sweet spot for shows like that.
I'm okay if they wanted to extend another season. I'd be all right with that. I wouldn't hate that. All right. What are your week 13 overreactions after this past week of the NFL? Usually we do this on Tuesdays, but the Aziz stuff just happened. What is your biggest overreaction after 13 weeks of the NFL season? 713-780-3776. Blankers, do you have any?
Yeah, I think the first one to me is all these people clamoring in Atlanta that you should sit down Kirk Cousins and you should play Michael Penix. And I don't care if Brian McDonald is holding his hand up or not. I mean,
that was actually one of mine.
This Falcons team has too much talent to now suddenly put a rookie quarterback that hasn't played all season in at quarterback and have any kind of expectations at all. Whereas as you have a guy in Kirk Cousins that maybe he's not playing his best football of late, but at the same time, he's kind of the reason why you got off to the start that you've had and that you're in the race for a playoff spot, to where why would you try and consider to do that now? And if you really want to kick him straight below the belt, he's going back to Minnesota this week.
Not this week. In my plan, I would start him the week after, but
I still think it's the wrong move, and I wouldn't even consider it. And I know that people are just, what have you done for me lately's all the times. I just think it's ridiculous to think about sending Cousins down at this point in the season.
I wouldn't say, though, it's just the last couple weeks. Like, you look at his overall stats, he has his worst yards per game since he's been a full-time starter, going all the way back to his third season in Washington. He's got his highest interception percentage since, like, 2019. I mean, he's not playing overall very well. And you look at the schedule after they go to Minnesota, I mean, they've got games against the Raiders, Giants, Commanders, and Panthers. I mean, like, one good defense in that group. I think if they
lose because you play Penix?
Yeah, but if you lose to Minnesota, I think it's worth a shot to see what you have, because that competition is bad enough to where Penix can still win those games. And hey, you drafted him 8th overall. If you actually think he's worthy of the 8th overall pick, then he should be able to play better than what Cousins has played so far.
You drafted him with the idea that he was going to play 2 years behind Cousins. So.
Yeah, but Cousins has been played poorly.
But he doesn't have to play phenomenally to win that division. But he can't afford to slip.
I mean, Tampa Bay has been slipping the last 5 weeks or so of the season, and they're still in a tie with Atlanta because Atlanta's also been losing those games right along with them.
So you want to do it to give them a boost. Like, you think this would help them.
I do.
It makes them a better team.
There's obviously the added benefit of finding out what you have going into next season. But I think it might. If they go to Minnesota and the offense lays an egg, then I'd be willing to switch to Penix going into the Raiders game.
Yeah. See, I'm not really worried as much about the added benefit of seeing what you have, because, I mean, you're really committed to Penix for the next, the rest of this year and 3 more. Like, he is your quarterback of the future, really, regardless of what happens this year. But you're tied for the NFC South. So to me, it's all about playing the best guy. Playing the best guy. That, to me, is the only thing that matters. Like, you're tied for first place in the NFC South. You owe it to the rest of your locker room to play the best guy. But Brian's arguing that Penix is the best guy.
And I don't think he is. And I think that just from reading coverages to, like, at this point in the season, having a guy that's going to come in that hasn't taken regular season significant reps at all, and you're going to try and put him on a crash course real fast and say it's going to be a better chance for this team to win and give him a boost, I just don't see it. As a veteran quarterback that honestly has played his best football in the regular season, and you know he's going to be motivated, and maybe he gets a little extra juice from going back to Minnesota, and then maybe they catch. But I don't want them to slip up.
He said after Minnesota.
Okay, let him play the Minnesota game. But at the same time, do I want Michael Penix trying to beat? Because you're kind of narrowing whatever the gap is in terms of the spread and how favored you're going to be and how much you should win by if you play Penix at quarterback.
I feel like you're also looking at way too much of what Kirk Cousins has done in the past in his regular season. Kirk Cousins in his last – look, I'm not saying make the change. I'm just kind of being a moderator here and an arbiter between the two. I'm being that Tennessee sideline reporter. He hasn't thrown a touchdown in the last three games, and he's thrown six interceptions. Like, he has been pretty stinking bad. And if he has another game against Minnesota like he had against the Chargers, I think you have to. I'm cool with giving him another week, maybe even 2 weeks, to see if there's anything left there. But if you put together four and then potentially five straight games of lousiness, I think you do have to make
a change. So even if you want to manage the game with your quarterbacks, who has a better chance of managing the game if you dial down the offense, Penix or Cousins?
Cousins, the way he's played the last 3 weeks, the answer would be Penix for me.
I mean, the answer is Cousins to me because I think if you're not, I'm going to say dumbing it down, but if you're kind of going more vanilla in the playbook.
I think it's kind of insulting to Penix, too. Like, he's been in this system for what? I mean, this is week 14. If you're giving him extra week two, that's week 15. That's almost 4 months in the offense.
He should know the offense, but he's still got to read defenses and do the things in the league with game time reps that he hasn't had.
He hasn't had game time reps, but what do you think he's been doing during the week?
Scout team?
I think that he's been doing more than just
I would wonder how many first team reps he's getting.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And I also think the idea that rookies can't come in and compete right away is kind of being pushed aside. I mean, Stroud last year, obviously Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, Drake May at certain times. Like, we're seeing rookie quarterbacks come in and play at a high level quicker than we have before. So I think the idea that Penix is going to come in and just be a disaster because he's a rookie is kind of an outdated thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate giving him a look. Like, if they're getting blown out by Minnesota, like, hey, play the fourth quarter and see what it looks like. And if it's like, okay, we have some positive momentum there, let's make the change. If it's, okay, that was also lousy, let's stick with Kirk. Like, I think there's some ways you can do it rather than just the binary start, sit in 2 weeks. It's like, if Cousins is playing lousy and we're getting hammered, let's see what Penix looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if I'm not in playoff contention and I don't have a chance that I would really like at this point of the season if Cousins is playing this way, then I really do want to see Michael Penix because he is my future.
Yeah, but he's saying it gives him a better chance now.
Right, I disagree. And he can criticize, you know, whatever my way of looking at this is. I just think that as a veteran quarterback reading defenses, even if you just have to have him manage the game more and not give him as much freedom, I think that there's enough weapons there, enough talent on that team that in that division you can't afford – any kind of hiccups.
Fair enough. I think I'm on the Penix side of Cousins continues to play bad. What overreaction do you have, Brian?
The other one I had was, maybe this is an overreaction just because, again, it's a rookie, but I think Brock Bowers has already established himself as the best tight end of football. You look at his numbers right now, I believe he's he's on pace right now for 119 receptions for 1,252 yards. Both would smash the previous rookies' records. One of them set just last year, 86 receptions by Sam Laporta. So go jump it up from 86 last year as the previous rookie record all the way up to 119. And then he'd also smash the yardage record for rookie tight ends, which was actually held by Mike Ditka, oddly enough. I mean, it's going way back. But he'd break that by almost 200 yards and be at 1,252, the previous one being 1,076. He doesn't have the touchdown because the overall offense, not great, obviously, especially after Devontae left. So they don't move the ball a whole lot. But I think Brock Bowers has established himself as the best tight end in the league.
I don't know if I'd go best tight end in the league.
Or at least receiving. At least the best receiving tight end in the league. If you want to factor in blocking and give that to Kittle, that's fine. But I think he's the best receiving option at tight end in the league right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of good options. And you know, there's a lot of guys that you know, do a lot of good things. And I was going to say, from a blocking and physical perspective, as well as just not just receiving the football, I think you can look across the league. You look at, you know, guys like, you can look at the fact that Mark Andrews is starting to come back again. He's really becoming a bigger factor each week with Baltimore. But you look at LaPorta. You look at Kraft in Green Bay.
Kraft?
He's playing really good football for the Packers.
He's not anywhere in the
universe. I'm not saying he's in the same universe, but I'm saying there's a lot of good tight ends in the league. I'm not going to say.
But he's. That's kind of a straw man. I'm sorry. I have to say it. He said that Brock Bowers is the best tight end in the league.
I'm just saying there's a lot of good tight ends in football. I'm not saying that Kraft's in the same conversation as Brock Bowers.
But why are you saying that?
Because I'm saying there's a lot of good tight ends to say he's the best in the league. I think there's. You can look at all the different guys in the league and say, do I think that he's already. Both blocking and receiving better than some of the guys that have been doing it for a longer period of time at a higher level? No, I don't.
I just don't know why you brought in Tucker Kraft.
Because I was trying to think of Vikings tight end that was traded from Detroit.
Hawkinson. I think that one thing that I'm learning about Brian in Blankers in the last 10 minutes is that Blankers puts a lot, not saying that either one is wrong. Blankers, you put a lot of weight on history. What a player has done over a period of time, and Brian puts almost no weight on history for what a player has done over a period. Brian's ready to make changes and call a guy the best ever after 2 or 3 weeks. Blankers needs about 2 or 3 years.
Guys, Hunter Kraft is easily the best in the tight end that's ever played in the NFL that I've ever seen.
I think that Bowers is definitely in the mix. I think Bowers is definitely in the mix from a receiving point of view. If you want to go strictly statistics, I don't think it's a debate. If you want to go strictly numbers. Now, if you want to go eye test, well, maybe all time. Like, I mean, he has chances to do things that tight ends have never done, ever.
For a one season, but I'm saying, like, to establish himself as the best going forward, you got to continue to do it.
Yeah,
well, but who's
right
the best
now.
Right now? Like, if you're playing a football game tomorrow and you could pick any tight end in the NFL to give you the best chance to win, which tight end are you picking? Like, that to me is how you answer the question of who is the best tight end currently. It's not, well, who's had the best who's had the best 3 to 5 years? Who's had the best last 3 to 5 games? No. The way that you determine who the best is at their position is if you say you're playing a game tomorrow, your life is on the line, you can pick any tight end walking planet Earth, which tight end are you picking to try to save your life?
I think I would take Andrews before I would take.
I'm going Bowers way over Andrews. I think Bowers is in the conversation. I think there are others in the conversation. LaPorta's not having a great statistical season. Sam LaPorta is in that conversation for me. I think Sam LaPorta is fantastic.
The only one I might take over Bowers is Kittle. Because of the blocking. He's so good as a blocker in addition to being a damn good receiver.
Right? Yeah, and a little older, but if we're talking about the best tight end today, I think it's fair to have Kittle in the conversation. Kelsey's too old for me. Kincaid hasn't taken the step up that I need. Dalton Schultz, just kidding. Kyle Pitts has kind of really never lived up to expectation. Mm. You know who's an underrated tight end whenever you have a good quarterback? David Njoku is not bad.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah, David Njoku, I would put him in the conversation.
No,
he's good. He's
like,
good.
It's more of a, I'm looking at tight ends right now. Like, David Njoku, if he's ever available, I would love him in this offense.
Yeah, I would love to see him.
He's a hell of a good receiver, and he's physical.
Receiver that we're sleeping on that needs to be in this conversation is Trey McBride.
Yeah, he's had a really good season.
Trey McBride belongs to this conversation.
Not much of a blocker, but he's a very good receiver.
I would have McBride, Bowers, and LaPorta as my final three. And
I think that's fair.
I would probably lean LaPorta. But you ain't going wrong with any of those three.
I mean,
and Kittle. I like Kittle because
Kittle's definitely in the conversation. I throw Andrews in there because if you watched him the last couple of weeks too, getting like to where he's really his old self again, high point in footballs with two defenders on him, his toughness, his ability to block and run. I think he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, he is really stinking good, and he hasn't had the slippage I thought he was going to have. Like, you get to his age and you start to see guys really, really slip. Kittle hasn't really slipped at all.
No, I mean, he's missed 2 games because of injury, but, I mean, this is more of a fantasy football's perspective, but you look at his consistency week to week, there's been no drop-off. He's great every single week except for the 2 weeks he's been hurt.
Yeah, Andrews is good, but he spooks me with how he started the year.
That's what I was going to say, because he's coming off injury too, right?
Yeah.
Because the Ravens had a lot of blocking issues with their offensive line, they're keeping him to block a ton too.
Yeah. Likely
got off to the hot start.
Really, one big game.
Really, yeah, one game. But
I was.
Which helped me win. Yeah, it did.
It's not over yet.
Theoretically,
Brian.
Win my bet against Jeremy.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Christian Harris is possible to return against Miami, according to Nick Caserio. How would you deploy Christian Harris if he does return? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, another quick word for Doc Linville. It's the holiday season, and Doc Linville has a variety of different ways he might be able to help you and or your significant other. He does Botox. He does spa treatments. He does plastic surgery. And, of course, he does what I always tell you about, the Neograft procedure and the PRP treatments to get your hair back and keep the hair that you have. Doc Linville's right here in the medical center, and he is waiting to help you. He loves helping Houston. He's told me time and time again when it comes to the Neograft, I just want as many people as I can to know about this procedure and know that it works. It's not all the gimmicks and the crap that doesn't. It's getting your own hair and taking some of it and putting it where you need it most so it's all the same color, it grows the same direction, it fills in, and it looks like you in your heyday again. It gives you self-confidence along the way, and you feel great about what he's been able to do. I'm telling you this because you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff because he wants to make sure he means it. He's not going to charge you the $150. He charges people off the street to come in to talk to him. Because you listen to us, you want to talk to him, you get a free consultation with Doc and his staff, and he can explain everything. The Neograft, the PRP treatments, which is actually like fertilizing your lawn. It takes the hair that's still on your head and makes it thicker and stronger and longer. And it's going to show you results as well. He does the best. He's here in Houston. He loves ESPN 97.5, and he wants you to check him out. Go to 975hair.com right now and set up your first consultation. It's free of charge, no signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitment to be made. They'll explain to you all the ways they can help while looking at your scalp and telling you what they think you need. You can make the decision from there. I tell you this because I did the procedure. I've done both that and the PRP treatments, and I can't speak highly enough of Doc, his staff, and the results that I got. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Vegas has literally no one else to throw to and bad quarterbacks to check down a lot. I do think that plays into Brock Bowers' numbers. I still think he's an insane talent. And I think the receivers are okay.
I mean, it didn't work for Mike Myers or whatever that other tight end's name that they drafted.
He was hurt
in the
second round.
The kid from Notre Dame?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's not just some warm body who's absorbing targets because there's no one else.
No, that on the flip side of that, you should say, well, then from a defensive perspective, we should just look to take away Brock Bowers, and we should be able to shut that down.
Especially the last game. They were at Kansas City, a top three defense in the league, and he goes off for 13 catches.
Yeah. Trey Tucker's not awful. Like, he's pretty good in space.
He's not bad.
And Jacoby Myers, I think, is an underrated receiver.
As a slot PPR type guy, sure.
Like, if you get a really good quarterback in there, like a young quarterback, like if Shedeur Sanders goes there, I think that a young quarterback can have success with that offense.
Oh, no
doubt. They need help at running back.
Yeah, you got some weapons, and I'm not taking anything away from him and his ability. He's probably going to be one of the premier tight ends in this league for years to come.
No, I was more to the texter. Another texter says, look at the back of the football card. I don't really know which one of you that's directed at, quite frankly.
It's probably my philosophy, right?
Maybe. You know, the back of his baseball card.
I don't know. Njoku misses half the season almost every year. He does miss a lot of games. Bowers is a monster, would have 20 touchdowns in the Lions offense. You would think so, but Laporta is also a monster and is having a quiet year. So it's weird. Although he did have a 2-touchdown performance the other day. Sam Laporta did. Huge 2-touchdown performance.
Like 7 yards receiving? Is that
3 catches,
was?
6 yards, 2 touchdowns. One of the most bizarre statistical lines I've ever seen. I think that's the weirdest statistical line I've ever seen. All right, Christian Harris possible to return against Miami, according to Casario. ESPN, YouTube, Shooter McGavin says ready to see Christian Harris back. Nick Casario brought this up yesterday with the media. He said, you know, he's going to be back sooner rather than later, we think. Didn't want to put a timeline on it. Then when he talked with Vandermeer and Harris, was a little more specific, like, yeah, I think we're going to see him soon. Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle mentioned like 2 months ago, probably see him after the bye, which is really bizarre to know 2 months ago we're going to see him after the bye. That's a very specific date for a long-term injury. And then Aaron Wilson has been reporting, I think earlier today, yesterday. Now, you know what we say. Now, has been reporting that we're probably going to see Christian Harris back for the Miami game, which is good because we assume that Azeez Al-Shaair will be suspended at least one game, probably two. Maybe it sticks to three. But if you do get Harris back for Miami, how do you deploy Christian Harris?
Carefully, because at this point in the year, you need him for the long haul. And so you shouldn't be sitting here going, oh, here's a guy that's going to be our savior, and he's going to come in, and he's going to do all these things like he did in the playoffs last year and be the kind of guy that can fill in and fill the void with Aziz out and you know, be a guy that we can count on. No, you got to be really, really careful with him, because I got to believe when Jonathan Alexander and people are reporting that, it's probably someone inside the building that said, look, at this point with where this injury is, we are not going to do anything until he's absolutely ready. And once he's ready, we're going to try and make sure we condition him up before we put him on the field. And even still, they're probably going to watch his snaps. I would not expect him to do a ton or, you know, right away against Miami. It would be great to get him back on the field, and then he's going to have to ramp it up where it's going to take some weeks. But I wouldn't rush him back or try and force the issue too much.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And D'Amico, I think, is 100% with you, too. Like, D'Amico Ryans, while he's kind of aggressive with injured players during the middle of a game, he is really conservative with players whenever they're coming off of injury, especially long-term injury. They placed Nico Collins on IR pretty quickly, and then when people thought he could be available to play, he did the whole Dusty Baker, gave him one more day off. This injury for Christian Harris has been pretty significant. It's been mysterious. He had the whole walkthrough at training camp and then somehow like tore his Achilles as he was walking through on training camp one day. I'm being facetious. I'm exaggerating. But he hasn't been seen since then. It was really, really weird. So he's missed all of training camp, basically, except for that one day. So you're talking about a couple of months there. You're talking about 14 weeks of the NFL season. So let's just call it 20 weeks. Let's say that's 5 months. He's been off of playing in an NFL game, and then if you want to even date it back to last season, the last time he's played in a real NFL game, you're going on like 8 months there. Yeah. Like 8-9 months since Christian Harris has played in a real NFL game. So I get you don't have Aziz Alshire. Like, I understand the fascination of Christian Harris. Finished last year really stinking good. I think he was trending up to being a top 10 linebacker in the NFL, and then he's had this season almost washed completely away. The truth of the matter is, yes, you're going to miss Aziz Alshire. Yes, it's going to be a difficult game, even though Miami's record's not great. But you have a two-game lead on the division. You have the tiebreaker in said division, so it's kind of like you have a three-game lead on the Indianapolis Colts. You're more than likely going to be a playoff team that plays a home game in the first round. I get wanting him desperately because of the scenario, but you need to be very careful with Christian Harris, because one more injury for Christian Harris, his season is toast.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And when you think about it, you do have bigger fish to fry. You should be a playoff team. You do have higher aspirations. And the fact is we've been harping all year on the lack of depth on this team. It's just, I think that fans should understand that, because we've been so conditioned based on what we had to go through with Kyle Tucker to realize that you shouldn't take chances with any of the injuries with significant players, especially at this point in the season, because of the fact that even the simplest of injuries seem to turn out into being months on end of waiting to get players back that could be helping you. This is the next case in line where you go, hey, we've seen this, we've been through this, let's make sure we don't do anything to screw it up, because of the fact that if he's with you and he does get his conditioning back, by the time you get to the playoffs and the late season, he can be a very, very big factor in benefiting your defense. If he gets hurt again, to your point, he's done for the year, and now your depth's even more at question.
Yeah, I want him to play like 10 plays, like 10 or 15 plays, quite frankly, the most that I want to see. Now, if it is somewhere between like 10 and 15 plays, would you rather see it sporadically over the game, or would you rather give him like every third or fourth series?
No, because you also have to worry about like the heating it up and then cooling it down. But at the same time, I would get him some reps, and then I would rest him, and then I would almost get him reps like second quarter or first quarter, and then maybe I'll get him a series off, get him another series because he's still warm. Then after halftime, let him stretch it out, warm it up, get him in the third quarter again, and that'd probably be about it for me, because I don't want him to sit for any period of time if it's a close game or you really need your key defenders out there, and then all of a sudden go, hey, go back out there and see if you can make a few more plays, and then you're more cold and you have a chance to get hurt even.
So how many series was that about?
Like four.
So depending on the length of the series, probably like 15, 20 plays.
That's his max.
Same window.
Max,
yeah.
Max.
Yeah, he's on a pitch count for me. You cannot, because if you, look, we don't think that the Texans have this deep playoff run in them, but the Texans are going to try to do that,
they should, obviously.
If that is your plan, and it is the Texans' plan, it's way more important for Christian Harris to be as close to 100% in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs than it is him playing 40 snaps because Azeez Al-Shaair suspended for a game.
I mean, you think about it. What would you rather see? Christian Harris trying to fill in to try and make do for Azeez Al-Shaair, or late in the season having Christian Harris next to Azeez Al-Shaair and being at his, you know, getting close to his top performance level again so that you can upgrade the level of your linebacker play?
Well, I want him to be, my goal is not next year at all. Like, I'm not thinking next year I'm a playoff
the rest
team.
Of the season.
Well, I want for the rest of the season. But, like, my entire goal with Christian Harris is building him up to be the best he can possibly be in that first round.
But that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying I don't want to see him too much right now try to fill in for however long Azeez Al-Shaair is suspended. Mm-hmm. I want him to be ramping it up so that when Azeez is back, you put him next to Azeez and go, well, our linebackers are way better now.
Yep. Is it what's more valuable, the ramp up of getting him as close to 100% as possible in the wild card round, or him going all in on the game against Miami with Miami coming off to the bye? Hopefully he's in really good football shape and is capable of doing that. See, but even if capable, it's not happening.
But that's what, and football speed is different, as we all know. Yep. But what I'm hoping is the reason why all these people were able to prognosticate the fact that, hey, it looks like the Miami game after the bye is when he's going to come back. That's because he got back to where he was cleared health-wise, and now it's ramping him up and trying to do as much cardio and conditioning as possible so that when he does touch the field again, he's as close to being in game shape as he can be.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. What would be your game plan? Total Arlington's texting in that Lawrence was placed on the IR. Yeah, we keep up with sports. That was like in the 3 o'clock hour, man. Do you want Devin White long-term with the Texans?
Oh, he's a Cowboys fan.
Do you want Devin White long-term with the Texans? Ask a texter.
No. I don't think there's a place for him. I think that if there would have been a place for him, especially with all that we're talking about, with the interchangeables that are being called on to play linebacker, that he'd be playing a more significant role than he is now if they believed that he was a guy systematically and ability-wise was a guy that you wanted around long-term. If this was in his heyday with the Buccaneers, absolutely. Right now, I think if he had the ability and he had the fit, we would have seen it by now. We'd be talking about him probably filling in this role.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not long-term. To me, he's a veteran role player that's filling a spot on this roster. He's not somebody you give an extension to, I don't think. 713-780-ESPN. Plus your linebackers going into next year that you have under contract, just off the top of my head. Like, I don't know Nevelle Hewitt's contract situation. I can't imagine it's longer than a one-year deal. But guys that you'd have under contract, Azeez was a two-year deal. Christian Harris would be going into his fourth year.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Fourth and final year was not a first rounder, so it would be the final year of his deal, which is an interesting conversation to have. And then Henry To'oTo'o is still in his rookie deal too. So, I mean, you have three linebackers under contract that would all be higher on the depth chart than Devin White. You're not signing Devin White.
Nope.
Like, you're looking to fill those positions probably with young players and guys that help you on special teams.
That was right place, right time for both guys. He needed a change of scenery to try and prove he could play. They needed anybody they could get with experience that might be able to be better than what they had. It's worked out for the rest of this season, and then you tip your cap.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. A new prediction on a contract for Alex Bregman. 6 years, $165 million. Should the Astros sign Bregman for 6 years, $165? Will they sign him for 6 years, $165? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Our good friend Eduardo Perez came on with us once, like 4 or 5 years ago. Good friend Eduardo Perez. He predicts this six-year, $165 million deal for Alex Bregman. I'm not really sure if Eduardo Perez is like predictions when it comes to players in the market, but he's around the game. Mm-hmm. Should they sign Alex Bregman to a six-year, $165 million deal?
So I don't think so because I don't like the 6 years. I don't mind the number as much if it averages out to be about 24 a year.
No, it's 27.5. 165 divided by six.
You're checking it?
No, it's 27.5.
Okay.
It's a math major for a semester, Blanker.
Super.
Also own a calculator.
Okay. I don't own a calculator anymore. Regardless, it's under $30 million a year. I hate the six-year aspect of this, but if you want Alex Bregman back, I think that's what you're going to have to face. You're probably going to have to take on a year or so more than you wanted to, and end up paying a little bit money with the chance that the ROI is not going to be there at the end of that deal. But if you want Alex Bregman back and you think he's going to be better for you for the next 3 to 5 years than whoever else you're looking at for your third base position, and especially for the next year or two when you're trying to still stay World Series capable, I think that he's going to have a market. You know, Soto's going to be the first domino to fall, and when he falls, depending on who gets him and who doesn't, the who doesn'ts are going to be clamoring to try and make other splashes. Boston, if they don't get him, is going to be looking at Alex Bregman. The Yankees, if they don't get him, will be looking at Alex Bregman. I just think that he's going to have suitors that are going to push that price tag up, and it's going to make the Astros very uncomfortable. But if you're telling me 6 years and 165 gets it done, I would be okay with it.
Yeah, that's I mean, it's a little over than what I was wanting. It's quite a bit over what I would really want to spend. Now, the 27.5 isn't a crazy AAV. It's actually a pay cut. He was making $30 million this past year, so $27.5 million AAV isn't awful. 165 for six is pushing the boundaries of how comfortable I am making this deal. No, I'm not gonna waffle on this. I don't want Bregman on that long of a deal. I don't think it's a crazy dollar figure. I really don't, and I could swallow this one easier than like the $200 million stuff. But 165 for six is too long for me. I don't think he lives up to that contract. Well, like if we're putting a monetary value on the value of a player and the production right. of a player, I don't think that Alex Bregman over the next 6 years pays you back $165 million worth of production.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But I think that you also have to take. That's a given, but it's the price that you're willing to pay to retain the services of a guy that's been a big part of your franchise that seems like your owner is more hell-bent on or at least focused on trying to do something with than he has been the guys previous. And also the fact that by the end of that deal, you're right, it's not going to be – he's not going to live up ROI-wise, but by the end of that deal, salaries are going to be so much higher that you might be looking at less than average players making in that range – to where at least for the next couple of years, I think the ROI would be good enough that you get because you don't have a lot of answers at third base.
No, you don't have a lot of answers at third base. That's definitely true. But when you're – and I understand the Astros top five payroll, they go into the competitive balance tax. You're not going to be spending like the Dodgers and the Yankees, maybe even the Red Sox, maybe even the Cubs. Maybe the Giants spend. Blue Jays kind of weirdly spend. Like that's they'll spend and then they'll trade away their big contracts and then they'll spend.
Why
again.
Are they in the Soto deal? Yeah, they were trying to cut contracts.
So they're weird. So the Astros to me have to be a team that spends their money wisely. If you're not going to spend more than the Dodgers and get into these shootouts in terms of contracts, I think that you need to like outsmart them. If you're going to spend $200 million, you need to be getting $250 million of production from that $200 million. Squeeze out as much return on that investment you possibly can. And the Astros have gotten into a bad habit recently of doing a very poor job of that. Jose Abreu, $58.5 million on a 3-year deal, nowhere close to that value. Rafael Montero, 3 years, $34.5 million, nowhere near the value of that contract. Even Josh Hader you could throw in. Yes, yep. It's only been 1 year, and there's still a lot that needs to be told on how that contract's going to pay off for you. But $95 million, he was okay in year one. He's not trending in a direction where he's going to pay off that $95 million. So I look at three decisions right there, two of them critically bad, one of them on the fence, probably not great. I just feel like the Astros have put themselves in a very, very difficult spot to continue to throw big contracts, even though it's not outrageous, 165 for six, at players that aren't going to live up to that contract.
No, the wiggle room is gone.
Yeah.
Right? You normally have a little financial flexibility where if you swing and miss a little bit or it's a little less than what you thought, you can recover. But because of the multiples that you mentioned, the fact is there's no more wiggle room left, and you better be damn sure and damn committed that when you do put pen to paper, if that's the kind of contract that you want to get from him, that he's going to be able to produce and live up to that. You know that, you know, he has been a staple, but you can't base it on that. What is he going to do going forward? He got off to the slowest of slow starts for a slow starter last year. Is that going to continue for the next 3, 5, 6 years? That could be a massive problem because it's probably going to get, he's going to probably struggle more or the struggles will continue longer.
Breaking news out of the NFL. Azeez Alshire has had his 3-game suspension upheld. Oof. He will miss all 3 of the games originally suspended for. Out versus Miami, out versus Kansas City, out versus Baltimore. I'm stunned by this, quite frankly. I thought he would be reduced down to a two-game suspension. I guess that previous relationship with old Walker, sideline reporter for the Tennessee Titans, didn't carry a whole lot of weight.
Or it was a bad one.
Yeah, or it was a bad relationship. Ramon wasn't having it.
Yeah, so the three-game suspension for Azeez Alshire has been upheld by hearing officer Ramon Foster, who was jointly appointed by the NFL and the NFLPA. Azeez Alshire goes from never being suspended, never being ejected prior to Sunday's game, to getting a three-game suspension. This shows you the NFL has all the power at once, and if they feel like a guy deserves a three-game suspension, regardless of precedent, regardless of history, like Nick Caserio was talking about yesterday, if the NFL feels like it's three games, it's going to be three games, and it seems like they had the hearing officers and the arbiters on the side of the NFL.
It just seems like they can do whatever the hell they want. And, you know, as much as we complain about what Rob Manfred does, the fact is that, you know, we know the NFL is king, and Roger and his boys can do whatever the hell they want. And whether we and ex-players and current players and others really kind of seem to sympathize with the length of the suspension and the fact that that was way too long and way too impactful for a guy that's never been suspended before, you deal with what they throw down, and they just decided to put their foot down.
Yeah, that's
I am surprised.
I'm surprised, too. I thought he'd be reduced down to two. So he's eligible to return week 18. So, like, that's the other, like, now as we transition into what does it look like whenever he comes back. I mean, three games is a long time. Week 18, you're talking about the final week of the regular season. It's going to be hard for the Texans to be at their best at the linebacker position when you have Christian Harris, who's hopefully three games into recovering and getting back to full strength, and then you have a kind of a rusty, cold Azeez Alshire thrown into the mix. That's a tough ask for a defense to be playing at their best.
That's a worst-case scenario, and he cannot practice with the team
during
this time.
He has to be away from them completely.
That's going to hurt as well, because conditioning-wise and just reps-wise and doing things to keep him football shape-wise, that's going to be a hell of a challenge, and that's going to be something that's going to hurt them. And you're right, because of the fact that you still have less thans in terms of your questions versus answers at the linebacker position as a whole, and you don't know what you're going to get out of Harris. That's not a good proposition to be in if you're the Texans going into the playoffs.
Man, it's tough. And plus, you're getting an Azeez Alshire who's away from all communication for his team for 3 weeks. You kind of worry about his headspace there a little bit, too. Like, what is Azeez Alshire you getting back? Not only is he rusty, but he's having to deal with a three-game suspension where he can't talk to any of his teammates, any of his coaches.
Is that true? It's not just that he can't be at the facility?
Yeah, I believe so. Like, you can't have any communication with him. Because Nick Caserio, like, part of his rant with the NFL was like, you're talking about player safety and like having the best interest of the player in mind, and you're suspending a guy for three games who can't be around his teammates or talk to his teammates. Where is the idea of being in the interest of, like, you know, player health when it comes to that point of view, from a mental point of view?
And not to mention, like we mentioned earlier, the fact that you're taking his game checks away, his livelihood for his family for 3 weeks. That's a massive impact as well. And all you're left is time to think, and you're supposed to stay in tip-top physical condition and be ready to hit the ground running when you come back.
Yeah, that's tough for the Houston Texans to be playing their best defense going into the postseason whenever Harris is going to be. We don't know what kind of Harris we're getting. We haven't seen him in 8 months. And then Azeez Alshire coming off a three-game suspension. Here you go, back into the Wolves in the final regular season game of the year. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll get a few thoughts on Azeez Alshire's suspension being upheld from you. Also, our car wreck of the day. What are your car wrecks of the day? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Azeez Alshire's appeal has been denied. He will serve a three-game suspension. He'll miss the Miami game, Kansas City game, Baltimore game. He'll be eligible to return whenever the Texans play the Titans in Week 18, which maybe that game has stakes. Maybe. We'll see if it has stakes or not. Texans hoping that Christian Harris will be back for Miami. His ramp-up period is going to be difficult for that Texans defense. Texter, wow, I am shocked the Titans radio guy screwed the Texans. It's hard to know if that came into play at all. Like, we'd have to put ourselves in the minds of all the parties that were involved here.
But what are we doing?
It didn't help.
The guy's got a career already. I mean, he's still doing radio. He's working. Why are you going to give him a job in the league office that is something that's dealing with the week-to-week, day-to-day functions of the NFL? You can't find other ex-players that might be able to do these jobs? The fact that John Runyon is one of the dirtiest players in the history of the league, and he's going to be the guy that's going to be passing judgment on if a play was dirty or not, or like to suspension?
I have more of a problem with Ramon Foster being part of the appeal process than I do with Runyon. Like, the Runyon thing, like, okay, well, he understands dirty football. Like, okay, I can understand that. He doesn't have, like, any sort of interest involved with other teams. He is a neutral party. I don't have as much a problem with Runyon, although that last paragraph and that whole reprimand to Aziz Alshire was very unnecessary. But I have more of an issue of a guy who's employed by a specific team in the NFL making rulings on players that are in the NFL, especially division rivals.
Like, this is the Brady rule, but in a different way, right? If you're working for a said team, doesn't matter what team it is, you shouldn't be allowed to make judgments or have commentary unless you're doing like a radio broadcast or a TV broadcast. But other than that, you can't be making decisions on guys from other teams.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
In your own division.
It's really silly. It's really silly. Like, it's like if you and I got into a fight and I cussed you out and they were going to suspend me and then you picked the length of my suspension. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's just, it makes zero sense.
It made zero sense whenever we saw it today too, but it was like, well, maybe he has a good relationship with him because he spent time with him last year. It really does make, I really don't have an issue with Runyon being the VP of whatever, because he doesn't have a like a dog in the fight. Like, he's not. I understand that it's hypocritical and it's a contradiction because of his playing style. But at the same time, he's kind of an expert on that playing style. He kind of understands. He kind of gets it. But when you have a guy who's literally on the books of a division rival, you should have to take yourself
The appeal process. What's the name of it? Like a judge or someone? And they did recluse themselves.
Yeah.
Well, then you should have to. If the league isn't smart enough to do it, then you should be able. You should be the one that does it because it's good on you and it might help you keep both jobs. But when I looked at all these guys that are on this committee that could possibly be assigned this thing to, maybe Jordy Nelson was the best guy to do it because he didn't play linebacker. He wasn't a dirty player. He was just a player. He played offense, but maybe he can judge speed of defense and maybe he could have helped. But you had a guy that was one of the dirtiest players of all time. And then you got a guy that's in your division, works for your division rival. That's going to be the guy that ends up being the guy that makes the final decision?
Yeah, you figure that he would have to be out of it. He would have to either recuse himself or the league would be like, hey, you can't have a Titan employee making a decision on a Houston Texan player. That's quite frankly ridiculous. All right, let's get to our car wreck of the day. 713-780-ESPN. What's your car wreck of the day?
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me your bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right, Blankers, what you got?
I got from the game last night in Golden State and the Nuggets. The Nuggets were out of timeouts. And what's his name? Christian Braun? Brown?
This kid from it's Kansas. Brown, yeah.
Brown, spelled but it's spelled Braun.
Yep.
He called a timeout right in front of the officials, and the officials decided to ignore him. And Steve Kerr lost his mind, rightfully so. Like, he's sitting there signaling the timeout right in front of you, and you're just going to ignore him when you know if the team signals it, a la Chris Webber. You blow the whistle, and then you find out he doesn't have any timeouts. They let that go, and it ended up being a factor towards the end of the game. I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah, why did they do that? Did they say?
I didn't see if there was a pool of reporters answer after the game or not, but Steve Kerr took to the podium and went nuts. And then I also want to nominate Steve Kerr as well, because Steve Kerr is like one of those guys that doesn't like confrontations with his players. He went into the post game after that and completely just undressed his boy.
I never know what you're talking
Podemzik,
about.
Podemzik.
I saw that.
And basically said, I hope he hears this. Why don't you just call him into your office?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's bad.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was ridiculous, too. I'm going to nominate Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson refused to go in the game for the Ravens the other day and has been suspended one game from the Ravens without pay for conduct detrimental to the team. He'll miss the game against the Giants after the bye. He went full Scottie Pippen. He got traded to a playoff team, went full Scottie Pippen. I guess once a Steeler, always a Steeler. He's going in for the Steelers against the division rival. You got one, Brian?
Yeah, quickly. Apparently, Lincoln Riley is rumored to be in the mix for UCF. Just what a amazing fall for going from Oklahoma and producing all these Heismaners to USC with Caleb Williams, and now you're thinking about tucking tail and going to UCF?
He says he's deflecting all NFL inquiries by saying I'm a Trojan.
I can't believe that one. All right, Who's winning?
The NFL.
I was going to say Deontay. That's a pretty bad one.
I'm going to go Deontay, too, because I nominated it. Deontay Johnson, you're the winner. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's blank on Brian. Soccer Matters coming up next with Glenn Davis right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.